It sounds like it drove through your house.
Hi, I'm Elizabeth Flux.
And I'm Ben McKenzie.
And welcome to, you know, not Pratchat.
It's true. It's Ook Club. Ook Club.
Ook Club.
Liz, do you ever... I got a serious question for you. Do you ever
A serious question.
Yeah, do you ever regret that we didn't call the main podcast Ook Club because it's such a great name?
Look, yes.
Because I'm going to admit that I do sometimes regret that.
But also Pratchat, like, even though this is not our Discworld section of it, it's like everything else. Ook Club might be a bit too Discworld, whereas Pratchat is like more to the ethos of what we do, which is to discuss Pratchat's work. So I think in terms of accuracy, it's more in line. In terms of pun value, it's slightly lower.
Yeah. Listen, you know, this does make me think of another question, though. Do you think there are copies of Pratchett's work in the Unseen University on the Discworld?
Oh, 100%.
That would be weird, wouldn't it? That'd be like going into Death's room and finding your own diary, but instead you find that there's all these volumes about different things happening on
the Discworld. I reckon the librarian knows some shit. Like, I think he's tapped into some stuff.
Yeah.
He's probably read all of it.
That's why he knows what's going on all the time.
Yeah.
He's already read it.
And why he's so chilled, because he knows he's going to be fine.
Yeah, he knows how popular he is with the author and with the audience.
Mm.
He knows he's got narrative protection.
Yeah, that's why he never goes bananas.
Yeah. That's weird, isn't it? But he doesn't. Yeah. Yes. Well, hello, listeners. Sorry, we didn't say hello, did we? I got distracted by my question. Hello.
Hello.
Subscribers. Did you know, Liz, this is podcast news. I keep abreast of all the podcast news. Apple.
Do you keep a peck of podcast news?
I do keep a peck of podcast news. Okay. I keep abreast of the podcast news. I listen to podcast news. I read a podcast news newsletter every day.
Is it done in a podcast?
It is also done in a podcast, but I read the newsletter. Fine. I don't have time for one more podcast. Even though it's a short
so many
one.
Ears.
No, but this
in
is this is this is news, right? That Apple is changing, you know, soon to come out update. Apple is going to change the Apple Podcasts app. So you don't subscribe to podcasts anymore. You follow them because they reckon that for people who don't already listen to podcasts, the term subscribe makes them feel like they have to pay money. And so they don't want to listen to podcasts because they don't think they're free. And so now subscribe will mean subscribe for money, just like you listeners who are listening to this special subscriber only podcast. That's what it'll mean. And so people, you will be subscribers, and then people who listen to Pratchat through an app will be followers of Pratchat, which makes us sound like a cult.
Yeah, no, I was going to say, like, followers automatically makes me think of cults, whereas subscribe logically means you are buried in a hole writing something that someone is dictating to you.
It does. Oh, no. And subscript, as we all know, is inferior to regular script.
What about listening to an audio program that you're interested in for free instead of subscribe? That just rolls off the tongue.
Wouldn't fit on a button, though.
It would if you used a really small font.
Really? Okay. Really small. You have to get out the magnifying glass. I don't know why I brought
that up. You just get really close to it. You don't have to get a magnifying glass. You just be real socially inappropriate, COVID inappropriate, and just get your eyeball right up against that bad boy.
Oh, listeners, I'm glad we're talking about nonsense. We're recording this in mid-March 2021. It has been it's a rough time in Australia. I mean, we're doing quite well on the COVID.
As bad as last March.
It's true. We're doing pretty well on the COVID scales, but there's a lot of other just horrendous nonsense going on. We won't talk about it. A lot of you are not in Australia. You don't need to hear about it. Just, you know, hold your politicians to account. They're all jerks. Hold everyone to account. Listen, we won't even go into it. It's too depressing. And this is not what you come to us for. Instead, you come for lighthearted chat about popular culture. Liz, speaking of popular culture that's of interest to our listeners, have you had a chance to see The Watch yet?
No, I'm sorry.
Oh, no, don't apologize. Look, it's a rough time for putting new things into your brain. I made room for it. Like, I can't watch more than about two TV shows at the moment. Yeah, I can't watch.
Look, I was not going to watch it. I know we're going to say watch a lot, so let's just embrace that. But, like, yeah. I was not going to watch it. As I've said in a previous episode, I was very apprehensive. But a lot of people have said that it's worth a go that I trust. So, I'm going to give it a chance.
I'll go on record as saying I'm one of those people. I think it's all right. Look, Liz hasn't seen it, but listeners, subscribers, I can call you that now. It's not confusing.
No spoilers.
If you would like us to watch it and record a special bonus episode about it, we would love to hear from you. I think we've asked this before, but I don't think we got an answer.
And not since it's been out, I think. It was in the lead up to it coming out.
We do have a channel on our Discord, for those of you who are on the Discord, for discussing it. We haven't been discussing it a lot there because there's a lot of people on the Discord who are just like, no, I'm not into it. And that's fine.
That's how I felt as well. I kind of still feel, but if the people I trust have led me wrong, I guess I will be well informed in my shellacking of them for making me watch it. But yeah.
But look, I would like to know what you think, subscribers. I think we might ask this on the next episode of the main podcast too, and see what the general listenership thinks. And if they say we're not interested, but you say you are, we'll do it as a Nook Club special.
Can we call it Who Will Watch the Watch It Us?
I feel that might be very close to the name of an actual other podcast.
How dare they come up with something that I just came up with for my brain before I came up with it in my brain.
No, they went back in time and they started their podcast before you came up with the name No, it's fine. All right. Well, look, we'll come back to that. But there's been some big TV on, though. Did you make room? Did you have room in your brain for WandaVision? This was the big one that everyone's been talking about.
Yeah, I confess, I loved WandaVision. I was not sure originally, but I sort of it's a pun name, and it feels like they built a whole show around the fact that they could make a pun out of the two characters' names. And I'm like, I'm into that. So I watched, I don't know if you've watched it already, but they dropped three episodes and then they went week by week. And I watched those three episodes really quickly. And I was like, I'm not sure where this is going, but I'm interested. And it was so fascinating seeing how they played with structure across the whole thing. So in short answer, yes, I've watched it and I loved it.
If you care about the Marvel Cinematic Universe at all, this could be a bit spoilery.
Oh, yeah, hang on. So if people don't want spoilers about WandaVision, where in this audio should they skip to?
Oh, yeah, they should just skip ahead to 16 minutes and about 21 seconds. I think that should do it. Yeah.
All right, that sounds good. So, if you don't want spoilers, skip to what Ben just said and just, and come back when you've watched it and love it.
I like how you very cowardly did not say what time again, Liz. You just referred to what I said to as if you couldn't possibly repeat the numbers I had just said.
I just don't have that foresight. I'm sorry.
That's fine. But look, I really enjoyed it. Look, as a student and now a teacher, this is new. I don't know if you know this about me, listeners. This is new for me since the last Ood Club, but I now teach comedy at an actual tertiary institution.
And yet you don't laugh at my comedy puns. I'm diminishing from your very, very big accomplishment, which is huge. It's a big deal.
It's a big deal for me, but
it's a big deal for everyone. Don't diminish that. It's a big deal.
But look, as a student and now a teacher of comedy, I really enjoyed the way that it sought to replicate the various eras of American sitcom. And really, I thought it did a great job of bringing those out, while also, inching the plot forward. I felt like just enough happened for the first, five or six episodes that you were like, oh yeah, this is weird and interesting, but I don't know exactly where it's going to go. And I had a little inkling because I'm kind of familiar with the comic book plot that it was based on, but it's still quite different to that. So I didn't really know. I just had a bit of an idea about what was going on. But yeah, I really liked it. I thought it was a lot of fun.
And it was smart. The thing is, they could have coasted on just doing the pastiche thing. They could have done, I don't know, what is it? I'm trying to do the maths. 6 or 7 episodes where each episode was a decade of sitcoms that they're doing an homage to. And they could have done that and it would have probably been received well, not great, but well enough. But, and they sold it. That was what they were going to do. Cause I remember seeing the trailers before it came out. I was like, oh, so they're going to just do this. It'll probably be a little bit of a story, but mostly just doing a nod to it. Cause it's WandaVision. So it's just going to be about TV and then they'll just do a bit of a thing at the end. But what they did was they did 3 episodes kind of that. And each episode they dropped a little bit of a hint of something else going on. And in the third episode, they're like a bit of a bigger hint. And after that, the gloves came off and they went in a whole different direction while still not feel like it didn't feel like they'd veered off into an entirely different show. It felt cohesive, which is a huge accomplishment.
Yeah, it was good. I'm interested. I don't often say this because I used to watch the Doctor Who one that they made, which was called originally called Doctor Who Confidential, which is like this like behind the scenes thing. And it felt more like an electronic press kit. It was just like very fluffy interviews with the actors and stuff. And it was aimed at kids, so they never really went very deep. But ever since I watched that, I've kind of got turned off behind the scenes, how we made this kind of shows. But I'm kind of interested to see the one for WandaVision, which has now come out as well.
It's fascinating because like, I only got into director's commentary because I listened to the Knight's Tale director's commentary, which featured Paul Bettany. So I was like, because he's very funny and he looks the same. That was like 20 years ago.
I did notice he is very funny. He should do more comedy. And actually, Elizabeth Olsen did quite well in the comedy as well.
She's a ridiculously talented actress who should have literally every award, including a Grammy, even though she doesn't sing. Like, she should have every award. Like, if you've seen her in Marcy, Martha, May, Marlene, it's...
I have not.
Oh, so that was, like, the first time the people realized, well, apparently not according to BuzzFeed, that the Olsen twins had a sister who was actually very talented.
Wait, hang on. Hold on. Hold the phone. Elizabeth Olsen is a sister.
Wait, did you not know this?
Mary-Kate and Ashley Olsen.
Yeah, she's their sister.
No, I had no idea about
this. She looks the same as them. She's like their triplet.
I did not know this.
Yeah, it was a big thing when they broke this on BuzzFeed.
Why weren't they in this show? Like, they would have been a perfect cameo because they're, like, famous for exactly one of the kinds of sitcom they were trying to recreate.
Yeah, like, they were, yeah. But that would have been brilliant. But I think they're done with acting. Like, I haven't seen them in anything for, like, 10 years.
Wow.
Okay. But, yeah, she is their sister. And basically, they were really famous. They did all their teen films after they had their childhood star stuff. And then they started doing like fragrances or whatever. And, you know, they're impressive businesswomen and all that. But I think she suddenly appeared. She'd probably been quietly doing things like a Culkin sibling for a while. But then suddenly she breasts out with this literally cult film, like a cult film about a cult. That she really showed her range and how good she is. And that movie still sticks with me. Yeah. And she just quietly plugged away at things. And then suddenly she was in like a Marvel film. And I was like, oh, that's that like really good actress who's like great at things. And so I'm glad she got given this really meaty role to show her range.
And she's very funny. And Paul Bettany is very funny too. I think he should do more comedy.
He retweeted one of my favorite memes from WandaVision, which was like, what is grief if not love persevering? And there's been a lot of versions of that. But my favorite one is like, what is the sheep? Okay. All right. What is the ship of Theseus, if not the ship of Theseus persevering?
That's great. I quite enjoyed that because you know, we talked about the ship of Theseus in the Fifth Elephant episode because it's a big theme. And then it turned up in WandaVision like the week after that. It was great.
Theseus. Theseus?
Yeah. I feel like we should say we're not sponsored by Disney or Marvel.
No.
They have not asked us to talk about this. We hadn't watched The Watch, so we wanted to talk about another cool TV show that we liked.
Well, and also like a cool Paul Bettany that we like, apparently, and also a cool Elizabeth Olsen that we like because she has a good name.
That's true.
It's weird. I remember more quotes from Paul Bettany than I do from perhaps my own life. From the Knight's Tale commentary, there's this great bit. I don't know if people have seen it. If you haven't, it stands up. Like there's some elements like all films from the early 2000s, but it's pretty good.
There was a recent article about how great it was.
Yeah, but there's this like in his first scene, like he's introduced butt naked walking down like a dirty road, and he's like Geoffrey Chaucer who wrote The Knight's Tale, which is like the loosely based thing that this is based on. And the first thing you see is like, because I saw it in the cinema, so I first met Paul Bettany's butt before I met Paul Bettany. And just walking down the street, and he like comes into the commentary at this point. He's like, well, there's my butt. And he's like, so here's the thing, can we say penis on this? He's like, well, so like the casting department, because like it would be rude and change their rating if it's swinging between his legs, they had to tape it to one of his legs so that you wouldn't see it. And he said that one of the worst things was having the tape pulled off at the end of the the shoot. But that's not even what I was going to say, because like what happens is like the people meet him and he's like been walking naked down there because he's been gambling, and he gets a thorn in his foot, and so he just puts his foot up to his face and like sucks a thorn out of it with his mouth. And he's like, oh yeah, I got cast in this because I can put my nose between my toes.
What?
Yeah. What? And I was like, that's weird. I wonder if anyone can do that. And then like, so I tried it and I can do it, but like, so thank you, Paul Bettany, for making 12-year-old me try that.
Wow.
Yeah. Okay.
Amazing. I recently watched a little YouTube compilation of interviews with Doug Jones, the very versatile costume performer. He's very tall. You may know him from things like he's Pan in Pan's Labyrinth. He's Abe Sapien in Hellboy. He's Saru in Star Trek Discovery. He's great. I love him. You very rarely see his face. There's a great episode of Discovery where they come up with a reason why you get to see him as a human being. It's great. But he was talking about that he got cast in many things for his ability to do that, because he did mime and physical clowning and stuff, and he can like, you know, he's really tall, but he's also a contortionist. Like, he can get himself into a suitcase and all that kind of stuff.
We could all get ourselves into a suitcase. It's just like, how much of yourself can you get in a suitcase?
That's true. And how big a suitcase?
Mm.
Or how small? Anyway, that's probably, we should probably stop talking about WandaVision. We may have lost some of our subscribers.
No, because they could have skipped over it, because we gave the exact skipping.
That's true. That's true. They might, welcome time travelers who have come here. From about 8.5 minutes in the past. It's very nice to see you. Now, this is no longer related to WandaVision, but you talked about a director's commentary. I think my favorite director's commentary moment is, I don't know if I've mentioned this on the podcast before, in the director's commentary for Armageddon, Ben Affleck says, I talked to the director and I said, wouldn't it make more sense to train astronauts to be miners than to train miners to be astronauts? Like, wouldn't that take less time? And he said, shut the fuck up. So that was the end of that conversation. And I just thought that was so great that made it onto the director's commentary of the film. I don't know at what point in the film he says that.
Like, director's commentaries were a wild west for like a really narrow window of time.
Did you ever see that TV show, Director's Commentary?
No.
With Rob Brydon? He just takes these clips from these old, obscure English TV shows and just does, I'm sure it's unscripted, he just does this director's commentary over the top, where he just invents this whole cast of characters that he used to work with making these TV shows, and he's obviously making it all up. And it's just, I mean, there's a few jokes in it, to be fair, that probably you wouldn't make now, but they're still mostly very funny.
That is basically how they dubbed Bruce Lee movies back in the day. They didn't have people who understood Chinese languages. They just had people going, what does it look like? What's happening in this scene? Let's just say something. Like, that's literally what happened.
That's how they did Monkey, the TV series.
Mm-hmm.
It was dubbed in the UK, and they only had, I think they did have a transcript of like the first couple of episodes, but after that, they just had like a synopsis of the plot, and then they just talked. And that's why they say ridiculous things, some of which, look, are really not all right. There's some pretty gross things that Monkey says. And then I think about the fact that this played on Australia's national broadcaster in a children's time slot. Surely they didn't leave that word in when they did that, but I think they did.
Well, I watched the Cantonese version. I'm not sure if it came out in the 90s or if they like had a resurgence of it in the 90s, but I watched it, and it's not that much more sensical in the proper language. But like, there is a scene that will stick with me forever where they go to a town and they challenge most of them to, I don't know, swim through this pool or whatever. And they do, but it's like steaming, and they're like, well, they're dead now. And they just like have like a pool skimmer, and they're going through it, and they're like pulling bones out of it. And I'm like, oh, these are the characters that I've grown to love is coming, but they've survived, because that's how TV works. But yeah, I sometimes get the image, like whenever I look at a pool, which I love pools, I just see like someone skimming it and pulling bones of loved ones out of it. So, you know, thank you, TV.
Look, for our non-Australian listeners, and indeed, I don't think anyone else will remember this show. We're talking about Monkey, which was a Japanese television adaptation of the Chinese folk novel Journey to the West.
Oh, I'm talking of a different version of that, but it is basically the same thing. You're talking about a
different one? Yeah. So it's
a different adaptation.
The one I'm talking about is the Japanese one that then got dubbed into English. And it's something.
Yeah, because like the key points are like, because I got read it as a child and I've forgotten things, but like I think he was inside a rock that got lit, like, struck by lightning, and that's how he was born.
Yeah, he's born out of stone. He's made of stone, yeah.
At some point, he goes under the sea, and he is given or steals a pillar that's holding up something that he shrinks down that becomes his staff.
Yeah, he steals the magic staff from the dragon of the, I think it's the Western Ocean. It's one of the dragons, and they're pretty pissed about it.
And when he somersaults, he can go 10,000 leagues.
Yeah. Oh, such a good thing. I mean, I would love there to be a modern translation. I wonder if there is, because like, I've read the famous one.
They made a new version of the TV show, but it's not the same.
Oh, yeah. That's the one they shot in New Zealand, isn't it?
Hmm.
Yeah.
I've heard it's good.
It looked like fun.
Yeah.
I think there was some controversy, though, because they didn't cast any actual Chinese people in it.
Look, I say this as a Eurasian. Like, I haven't watched it and things, but like, literally, the characters are animals.
Well, yeah, that is a fair point. They are a monkey person, a pig person who used to be a spirit.
A demon that makes become monster. Good. Yeah.
Yeah, like they're, it's, yeah, that's, look, that's not unfair. I haven't watched that new version, but it'd be interesting. I have played, there's a great video game called Enslaved Odyssey to the West, which is directed by, what's his name? The guy who played Gollum.
Andy Serkis.
Yeah, Andy Serkis. Like, he tried to make himself... I mean, as much as I enjoy his work, he's got this sort of... He wants to be king of all of the motion capture actors, which is, you know...
Whereas he's actually king of 13 going on 30.
That's true. It does seem a bit that way. But anyway, he also worked in video games doing motion capture, so he did motion capture for this game. And it's like a weird future dystopian adaptation of the story, where all of the monsters are not demons, they're robots. And Monkey is not actually a monkey, but he does have to wear the thing on his head, so that the story of Monkey is he gets in trouble with the gods for being a jerk, basically, and they imprison him under a mountain. And then when they're sending this priest to the West, the journey of the title, to fetch the scriptures that will become the sort of basis of religion in the future, they let him out to accompany the priest and keep him safe. But the priest puts this circlet on his head and knows a little sutra that if they say it, will give him a headache. And
no, it's because they shrink the literal head. Because
it shrinks it.
And
yeah, and it hurts his head. So he, in the TV show, in the British adaptation, they refer to it as a headache sutra at one point, I think. But which is a bit mean.
Is there a spider goddess in your version?
Pretty sure there was one at some point. It's very long. There's like 50 episodes or something.
Oh, yeah. I don't think you understand very long in, like, Chinese TV series.
Well,
like,
no, I mean,
50 episodes is, like, a blink of the eye. Like, if it's 150 episodes, that's, like, normal. But she was my favorite character. I remember, like, she had, like, buns on the side of her head covered in cloths, and she was, like, very disobedient, but she fell in love with him, and he did not reciprocate it. And I think she ended up sacrificing her life for his. And I just remember this scene, and I don't know if I've, like, retconned it in my brain, that she was dying, and she was like, I love you, whatever. And he's like, yeah. And then she died. I was like, just say that you, like, she's about to die and you know it. Like, just be kind, you jerk.
I'm pretty sure that did happen in the one I watched. Maybe it was the same one, but like two different dubs of it or something.
Yeah.
I don't know. But anyway.
She was my favorite because when they turned into human form, they couldn't walk straight. They walked in zigzags. And I remember that was very, very interesting.
That would have been a much better source of inspiration for Pratchett doing something like Interesting Times than any of the themes that he used. There you go. I brought it back on topic. Are you proud of me, subscribers, listeners?
Who's Pratchett? No, I'm kidding. But yeah.
But look, you know, we're not just here. We're
not here to fuck spiders.
That's true. We're not.
And neither is Monkey.
We're here to talk about stuff. Like, no, look, I think that's probably enough preamble where we talk about off-topic.
Was that things. Preamble? Is this not our episode?
Okay. No. We're not talking about The Watch because you haven't watched it yet, but please, just a reminder, please let us know if you would like us to do an episode all about it when we've both seen it. But we did do something fun recently, Liz, that was Pratchett related. We were on a convention panel on the internet.
Yes, that was really fun. And it was at 2 a.m. for us. So, like, you have to, like, know it was fun if we still enjoyed it despite the sleep deprivation.
Yeah. We did mention this on the latest episode we recorded before this, Pratchett 41, our nation episode. But the Lamados Holiday Camp is a sort of I think it's biannual event, and it's not so much a convention as it is run like a traditional UK holiday camp where they do all the kind of ridiculous things.
Sounds amazing.
Like knobbly knee competitions and, you know, stupid sack races and stuff. The kind of stuff you only do on camp when you're like five normally, but then this
means stuff that I am good at but have now not found any application for in my life.
Well, maybe we need to run the 4X holiday camp, Liz.
No, we have to go to Wales and enjoy this one.
Okay, all right, that makes sense.
Yeah.
It just makes me think of that episode of Maid Marian and Her Merry Men, which is a British sitcom version of the Robin Hood story, in which Maid Marian is the only sensible one. And runs the sort of gang. And Robin is a cowardly tailor from Kensington. It's great. It's from Tony Robinson of Blackadder fame.
Time Team fame?
Of Time Team fame. We've had this discussion before. Anyway, it reminds me of that because there's an episode where King John goes on holiday and goes to a terrible holiday camp by the sea. And it's very much it's very much like that. But no, they run this. Obviously, they couldn't do it this year. To our listeners, subscribers in the UK, look, we've been through lockdown and we know it sucks. So our heart goes out to you. As we're recording this, you're still very locked down, although the UK is doing a great job of getting vaccinations out there. So our fingers are crossed that it won't last too much longer for you. But they obviously couldn't do it, so they did it online. And that meant they could invite us. And we were on a panel with some other podcasters, which was really fun. These are people we knew existed. Like, I've listened to a couple of episodes of each of these podcasts now. And it was really nice to sort of meet them in person. Well, digitally.
They were really awesome. It was a really fun event. Like, and it was really cool seeing the different ways that people approach doing a podcast about Terry Pratchett and his work. Because I would have thought there's like one proper way to do it, and that's the way we do it, and everyone else is wrong. Because, you know, that just makes sense. But I was very surprised and also very pleased about, like, the different ways that people have approached it.
Yeah. And it's like little tweaks to the formula. Like, I think when I found out about The Truth Shall Make You Fret and how they do several episodes per book, I was like, oh, that's such a good idea.
Yeah, but I've seen your notes. Of course you think that's a good idea.
That's true. I'm a bit...
You can't jump ship to their podcast. I'm sorry.
I'm not. Well,
stuck with me.
I think they would neither want me nor need me. That's fine.
I was very impressed by their sticky notes. It was
good.
Impressed and intimidated. There were a lot of them.
Were you impressed, intimidated by my sticky notes when I went through my sticky note phase?
I gotta say, like, I've learned through bitter experience, sticky notes seem to work for other people, but when I do them, it's for me to feel like I am doing something. I never use them in the way that I intend.
I tried using some reusable ones. They're plastic ones.
They're all reusable, if you have the right mindset.
Sure. These ones are explicitly reusable, but I can't write on them because they're plastic. And I kind of transferred them from one book to another like four or five times. And... They were all right. They were useful, but then I stopped doing it. And I've been through several things. Like, originally I kept a paper notebook that I scribbled notes in while I was reading, and it made it so slow to read the books. And then I tried doing the sticky notes, and then I'd come back and look at the sticky notes and write notes about the things that I found in the sticky notes. And then I started trying to keep notes in a Google Doc, and look, none of them have quite done it for me. I think I need to use a combo method.
You're going to use my method.
What's that?
Because I've been using the same method all the way through. I get an A4 piece of paper. I fold it into four. When it's a Discord book, they have four categories. Or, like, they have notes, footnotes, and quotes. And a blank page, actually. Mm-hmm. And so, as I go through the book, if something jumps out at me, I will jot down the page number, if it's relevant, and keywords to remind me, like, what I was interested in on that page. And then, if it seems super significant, I will underline it. And that's all I do.
Right.
Also, you should also read the book on the day that we're recording the podcast, because then it's fresh in your brain.
That is your other secret, isn't it? You read the book as late as possible before we record.
Yeah, and I remember them, and it's good.
It's true. It's true, you do.
But also, it's very stressful.
It was great to... I wish we should have talked more about this, like our preparation and stuff. I would love to know more about that.
It wasn't time, like, as in, like, we could have talked probably for, like, 3 hours.
Oh,
and we
yeah.
had, like, half an hour. So, like, yeah, it would have been great to talk about it, but, yeah.
Yeah, and I hope we do. It was nice. Colm was there from Radio Morpork, which is the first podcast to do a read-through of all the Discworld. They started about a year before we started. And if they'd been consistent and kept up one a month, which is not a diss at them, this is hard to do. I'm surprised we've managed it, but if they had, they would have finished by now. In fact, they would have finished about a year ago. But, you know, they've taken their time and they're getting near the end. I think the latest episode they put out is Snuff. So they're only a few episodes away from the end of the podcast.
Did you say podcast?
I may have said podcast.
That's not even Freudian. That's something else.
It's just my mouth making slightly the wrong shape. That's all that
podcast.
Is. They're very closely related. They're both.
They're not. There's a whole different mouth movement.
Look. Anyway.
B versus P. It's different.
They are different, but they're not. Anyway. podcast. There. Now I'm going to edit that word in where I said
how
podcast
dare you?
Before. And
did you say podcast? No.
How dare you? This is all getting cut.
I'm just going to say that every 3 minutes. Just
no.
No.
Do that. But yeah, it was really nice to meet them all. And Al was there from Desert Island Discworld.
Can we call him Al?
I didn't ask.
Hmm. I'm just edit in a drum solo here.
I wouldn't comment about this normally, but there's a previous episode where we recorded at this time of the evening and you could really loudly hear cicadas or cicadas, depending on what state you're from. Coming from outside my window, and I can hear them right now. So I'm assuming they're audible.
I can't hear them.
You can't hear them? Or maybe they're not audible then. They're only audible to me. Who knows?
What's the, like, texture of our, like,
it's nice, you know,
environment?
Make you sound like I'm recording out in the Australian countryside.
I've been watching a lot of Elementary, and he would be able to pinpoint exactly where the fuck you are from that.
Elementary.
So
it's so
it's
good.
Very good. I thought it would suck, like, when I first heard about it, like, what, 10 years ago, but it's actually very good.
Oh, really? You thought it would suck?
Yeah.
It, did,
but, like, it just sounded like it was trying too hard to be different, but actually it works really well.
I think it's down 90% of the performances. The cast are all so good.
They nailed it, like everyone. And they stayed for the whole series, all of them.
Best Watson ever.
Yep.
And look, and I've gone back and forth on this because I have several that I love, but I think best Holmes ever.
I love that he and Benedict Cumberbatch alternated roles in a National Theatre live.
Oh, the Frankenstein.
Yeah. And during, like, the biggest lockdown last year, National Theatre put those online that you could watch both of them, and I did.
I missed it. Oh, no.
Yeah, they did both. It was great because I remember I was working at Cinema Nova in Melbourne when we showed those, and they sold out every time because we did, like, the Johnny Lee Miller as Monster one weekend, and then we did Benedict Cumberbatch as Monster the next weekend, and it was the same people for, like, most of both because people wanted to see each side.
Yeah.
And I wanted to see it so badly, but I was working every shift that it was on, and I was unable to see it, and because it was so limited release, and then I was like, oh, well, all it took was, like, the world be plunged into a huge disaster, and I could watch both of them.
I wish I had seen it, but
we'll probably
not
do it again. If I see it come up, I will tell you.
Yeah, please do. I did not realize that they had put it online. I totally missed that.
It was amazing. I'm not making you feel better, but it was really cool watching
That's
both of
them. I mean, I still have a whole...
I did an Instagram story, so, I mean, I guess, like, you don't watch my Instagram stories about my cats.
I do. Just not all the time. Maybe I did notice that you were talking about. Anyway, I didn't see it. I missed it. I will regret it forever if I never get another chance. But
you will get another chance, 100%.
I still have most of the last season of Elementary to watch. Because I waited a long time for it to come on the streaming service here in Australia that carries it.
It's consistent. The writing is consistent.
It is. Yeah. And the ending of the previous season was...
Them and their rude cliffhangers, and then they don't bring out a season for 2 years on the streaming service. It's just, it's rude.
They nail it. But look, maybe we should get into some questions because I think... I've just heard someone on your end there, Liz.
It was Asimov, and he's saying, oh, in half an hour, you have to watch this documentary about a fire on a ghost train. So we should probably get into some questions.
Fire on a ghost. That sounds amazing. I need to hear more about that later. Anyway, Belle did ask a question about Asimov. Thank you, Belle, via Discord, about how Asimov's doing with you being home for lockdown. So, but of course, you know, since this question was asked, or at least I don't know if Belle, if you knew that Liz had two cats now, but you do have two cats.
We did have one that showed up during the first lockdown, basically, who was mewing inside a car engine and the whole street heard. And then there was a concerted effort on our street to find this kitten, and it turned out to be two kittens.
Wow.
So I kept one and our neighbor kept the other. So we've now got Asimov and Huxley, and across the road lives Huxley's brother, Billy Bob.
Billy Bob. Okay.
Yeah, he comes and visits sometimes because he's allowed to be outdoors, whereas Asimov and Huxley are indoor cats.
Yes.
But to answer your question, Asimov right now is on my lap, so he can help with this. He just jumped up, actually, as you started to ask.
Oh, wow.
This question. So it's as though he knew, because he's very smart.
So can I ask him directly? Is he listening?
Yeah.
Asimov?
He's very quiet.
How have you been doing with Liz home all the time for the lockdown?
Well, that's a stony silence from the boy.
Oh, dear.
But I think he's actually been quite pleased about it. But he's, and I know I'm being like a person about their cats, because he's got a very distinct personality. He's very polite and non-vocal. But he will. I have a job where I get up at 5:45 every morning and edit a newsletter. And he will often wake up with me and come downstairs and sit on my legs or in my lap or helpfully on my arms as I'm trying to edit it. So I think he quite likes that I'm at home. That's continued.
But not on the keyboard though.
He has already broken one of my computers that way.
Wow.
Back in the day, but now I think I've trained him out of it. But
okay. I feel like I've gotten off lightly. Cause I live with a cat now, as I have for several months now, Chaos, who, as subscribers who are on the Discord will know, ran away just before
really
New
stressful.
Year's Eve. It was very stressful because my partner had just moved in. I just moved house and she just moved in, and the cat had been there, and we were all like kind of just getting used to all living in the same house. I'm still trying to unpack everything and figure out how to reorganize the house so that everything fit. And we accidentally left a window open, which was very high up. And he got out and then couldn't figure out how to get back in. He ran away. He was gone for 5 days. And then we found him hiding under a shed about a block and a half away. Some people found him and saw our poster. So it was very stressful. But he mostly likes it. He likes that we're home. My partner likes the fact that we share an office when we're working from home. And so now when he's being annoying, he only annoys her 50% of the time, because the other 50% of the time he's annoying me.
If you're out and you come back, does he, like, wait at the door to greet you?
No, he waits at the door when the screen door is closed and the other door is open. That's just so he can look at the... Because the one thing he doesn't like about living here is that there are other cats that live next door and over the road. And he's an indoor-only cat, so he doesn't go outside. But they're outdoor cats, and they often are walking around where he can see them. And he doesn't
like
that.
Well, they love to do that.
He does not like that. There's one very cheeky one next door that will occasionally be sitting on the fence on our backyard, and I'll see them and I'll say, get out of here. And they'll go over the fence, and then I'll turn around and then I'll turn back, and they'll have just sort of popped their head up over the fence, like in a cartoon. It's very silly. He doesn't like that cat either.
Yeah. We've got a cat across the road that is the boss. I've seen her stare down a dog, like a really big dog. Like, the dog tried to intimidate her and was barking, getting all up in her business. She's like, I'm sitting in my yard. You're not going to do anything. And he was just, like, bashfully slinked off. But, yeah, she will come into the front yard, and the indoor cats can do nothing about it. And she's like, well, look, it's my front yard. You might live here, but it's mine.
Wow. Okay.
This is
intense.
It's cat power. There's a documentary where they put GoPros on cats. It's very interesting.
Yeah. Is that the same one where they do the GPS trackers and they...
Possibly is that instead of GoPros. There's an old man who says, when he's out, I get sad. When he's inside, fine. I'm like, you should have an indoor cat.
Yeah, just don't let him outside.
I
don't see the issue. But, I mean, it's difficult. I read this great book. I recommend this for all cat lovers, or if you're going to get a cat. What Cats Want...
Is it food? Is the answer food?
It is food. It's a book that just food all the way through it. No, it's by Dr. Yuki Hattori, who's Japan's leading cat doctor, according to the book. but it's a really cute book. It's got all these cute little cartoons about cats, and it teaches you all the things you need to know about having a cat and how to look after them. And one of the things it taught me is that having an indoor cat is good. It's good for the cat. Obviously, in Australia, it's really good for the wildlife. But also, it's good because if you let them outside at all, they get a taste for it. They want to go back out, and it's difficult to stop them. So I think it's, if you've got a cat that's used to being outside, it's quite difficult to keep them inside all the time.
Yeah. Well, Asimov came from a shelter, and one of the things that came with adopting him was to say that a commitment to keeping him inside, because apparently he's got a pale nose, which makes him prone to skin cancer.
Oh, I can relate to this.
Mm. Outdoors, we've been, he's attacking his sister now. You might hear some yelling soon.
Okay. All right. Yeah. Well, we should get on to some more questions. Are you enjoying it? This is a turnaround. Normally, you ask the questions. Are you happy with me asking the questions?
No. Yeah. No. Ask the questions. I like it.
It's okay. Good. Look, I like this one from Shut Up Banks. That's his username, by the way. We're not being rude. What is our favorite Pratchett riff on folklore, for example? He says his would be the whole thing with elves, the fair folk from Lords and Ladies, how we think they're wonderful and beautiful, but the real horror is barely a scratch below the surface of the myth, which is great and very much draws on the kind of origins of, as we discussed in the episodes where we've talked about them, but very much draws on their origins in Celtic mythology.
It is hard to pick a favorite, but I would say like that whole sequence in, is it Witches Abroad, where they have like a whole fairy tale sequence.
Oh yeah. Where they meet the Cinderella castle and then the wolf in the woods and then the Wizard of Oz stuff.
Like,
yeah.
That is all brilliant, and I absolutely love that. Like, I had the best time reading that. Like, I had the best time reading all of his books, but I had, like, an extra level of enjoyment there because I was like, this is just really my thing. But I really liked, I think, his subversion of the sad old lady witch living in a house by herself, like, being treated badly, and how he had Grinning Weatherwax, like, flip that around in terms of how people treated them. Was that the thing where, like, the villagers are treating this woman really badly and she ends up getting them to, like, properly, like, help her out?
Hmm.
Yeah, so I think that might be it, but I think it's such a changeable thing because he writes so many of them so well that you could be like, oh, no, what about this one? And I'd be like, oh, that's amazing. So,
it's hard to pick. Yeah, I'm really looking forward to when we do the folklore of Discworld, which I think will probably be towards the end because the revised edition goes up to nearly the last book. I think it's all of them up to Raising Steam. I think it might have been updated too, so it only misses out on Shepherd's Crown. But it's like, this is so much. I really like his sort of take on dwarves or dwarfs.
Depends on how Tolkien you are about things.
Yeah. If you were going to do a podcast about Tolkien, Liz, what would you call it? Surely you've got
what you're talking about, fool.
There you go. And then you just Tolkien refer to Tolkien as Mr. T.
Oh, dear.
But yeah, no, I love the dwarfs. I love trolls. I love his sort of mythology about the trolls and the interaction between dwarfs and trolls. I think.
Sorry, I came up with a really rude one. Sorry.
Yeah, what is
it? It's like a rom-com version or an erotic fanfiction version of The Hobbit, which is just Bilbo's Shaggins.
Okay. Well, I mean, at least you didn't go for the other obvious route.
What? Was it the Eye of Sauron? Because that's just like, you know.
No. You know what I'm talking about.
No.
Well, what is Bilbo? The word Bilbo has a striking resemblance to one word.
That had never occurred to me.
Thank you
for ruining that.
I'm sorry.
It's okay.
But no, there's so many. I thought about this, but I think it is elves. Elves are really good. Dwarfs, trolls, and golems. I kind of like
golems.
Golems, yeah. I like where he goes with them. I think that. But look, they're all so good. I don't even know if I can pick a favorite. But the dwarfs. I mean, maybe it's just because we've recently read The Fifth Elephant, and I think we've got Thud coming up later in the year or early next year, but I'm really looking forward to that because that's sort of the dwarf politics and how their society functions and the ways that he looks into that and the dwarf characters. I love them. They're great.
Coming up with a favorite is against the lore.
Well, you're going to hate our next question because Joel on Discord asked us, he said there's been discussions of our favorite witch. But who's your favorite watch person and why?
It's Vimes.
I feel like that's cheating somehow.
It's not, but this is like, it's because it's so obvious because he's the best one. Everyone else is like the secondary character to him.
Okay. Well, who's his second favorite then?
Oh, that's rude. That's too tough.
It's hard, right? Because there's such a, they're an ensemble.
Yeah.
I mean, Angus.
It's like saying, who's your favorite character in Brooklyn Nine-Nine? Oh, it's Holt.
Holt.
You know, yeah. But then after that.
It's not that hard. Yeah.
Rosa. Okay, no, that's a terrible analogy. I'm going to rescind that.
It's not happening.
Right. And then it's Boyle. Okay, let's just rank the Brooklyn Nine-Nine characters. Okay.
I don't, that's not, you're just stalling for time now. I really liked Cheery, and I really liked, and I'm always sad that he died so quickly, but I really liked Cuddy. And which is weird, really, because, like, you know, he's only in the one book, but he just made such an impression. And I think it felt kind of special when he was the one, you know, he was the dwarf in the watch and he was the one who was trying to make the most of it. And he has that whole great, like, buddy cop thing going with Detritus. And I just love it. And he makes the helmet for Detritus and they're just, they're best mates. And then he dies and it's so sad. And
I think maybe Detritus is going to be my second one. Then you come around. Like, yeah.
He is great. Detritus is also great.
Cause he's,
I've said it both ways now, by the way, just to make everyone happy.
He's an interesting character because he's, like, very much a troll, but he's also a watchman through and through.
Yeah.
And even though he's always, like, a peripheral character, he doesn't get his, like, book or anything. He's fascinating in a way that, you know, like, you feel like you could go down to the pub with him and have an interesting evening in a way that Carrot would bore the shit out of you.
Yes.
And Angua would be moody to the point of not being able to deal. Like, you have to get close to her before things are good.
Yeah.
And that process would be quite difficult if you weren't already in the watch. Colin and Nobby are interesting to watch from afar, but you wouldn't want to. I think
they're great comedy characters, but I don't know if they're my favorites.
So I think, like, from the slim pickings, like, not slim pickings, but, like, the narrow differences in terms of who is elevated slightly in terms of being a favorite.
Look,
I think.
Yeah. I think Cheery is great. Cheery's right up there. I want to throw out some special mentions. I think Constable Visit, aka Washpot, is always good value. I love
the one
him.
Who's always, like, giving pamphlets.
Yeah. I like him. Because I also like that doesn't become his whole character. Like, yes, there's a joke about it every book he's in, but he's always doing other stuff as well. And I just like, he's just dependable. Red Shoe's always good, but Red Shoe is kind of Red Shoe. Like, he doesn't really change when he becomes a watch person. He's also good at that. So he's quite good. Who's the other? Oh, and Constable Dorful. Just because I really like Golems as characters. And he's not in a lot the later books, but he's pretty
not in it a Dorful lot.
That is a Dorful pun.
Sorry.
Belle had another question. I actually do want to answer this one because I think it'd be good. I'm interested in your perspective on this, but what have been the challenges, benefits, and surprises in creating community around the podcast? Because it's something we both had a big hand in. It's something we always wanted to do as part of, like, it was always part of the plan because we wanted it to be like a book club.
Let's start with benefits. It's I'm always surprised when people beyond people I know from, like, school or from my life or from work listen to it. In fact, like, very few people from my actual life listen to our podcast. I kind of thought it'd be like you and me talking about a thing we liked. It's like even if it was just you and me talking about it, that would be enough for me. Yeah. And I'm always surprised and thrilled when people listen to it and enjoy it and also have things to say or perspectives to offer or questions to ask. Like, that's huge because that, like, shapes an episode, like how we think about things. It shapes how I think about books when I revisit them again in the future. Having a community at all is a huge benefit. And the challenges of it tie in with that because, like, I never want to disappoint any of our listeners, because now that I know that there's people listening to it, I want to make sure that I do my best and that I don't get things wrong, or yeah, it's hard to put into words. Like, it's just the benefits and the challenges go hand in hand with me. Like, knowing that we have a community means that I want to put our best foot forward and also make sure that we accommodate different viewpoints and hear what everyone has to say about the episodes, the books, all of that.
Yeah. I've been reflecting on this because one of the challenges is one of the ways you really build a community and a listenership with a podcast is to be consistent. So I've been very, and I'm proud of the fact that, you know, for nearly 42 months now, the episode has come out on time every month. And
I just want to say right now that that is entirely Ben's credit. Ben edits the episodes. Ben will do the all-nighter to edit them. I would help if I could, but like,
it's not really a two-person job.
No, but like, the episodes coming out consistently is 100% Ben's victory. So I don't feel like he gets enough credit for that. So I'd like to say that here, that Ben puts in the effort to make it come out. Like, if it was me, I don't think it'd be as consistent. So that is entirely your thing.
Well, thank you. That's very nice to say. But I mean,
it's not nice. It's true.
Well, all right. But I do it because I know that that's, you know, it means that it's reliable. It means that if you're a listener and you're getting something out of this, and we've had some really lovely messages about people saying, you know, that it's helped them get through lockdown, that it's kept them company when they have long commutes or when they're out walking the dog or running. But the reverse is also true. Like, the fact that people listen to it and we reliably hear from people asking questions and reacting to the podcast coming out and letting us know. Like, that's one of the things that's got me through those things, you know?
Yeah.
100%. Having that consistency in my life, which is otherwise, you know, as a partly freelancing, partly casual arts worker, where my life is not the same 2 days in a row, work-wise, let alone personal-wise, it's been a huge thing. And I don't think, I don't know if I've spoken enough about that on the podcast, but it's really helped me. And I think I've been surprised at how those two things have kind of gone together. But it's just been really lovely, all the people that we've met. And I think I've been really surprised and excited that a lot of our listeners are not from Australia, that we get people from overseas listening, that some people are reading the books, because I kind of always suspected that a lot of people wouldn't. Like, it's a struggle for us, particularly now when, you know, we've been through two long lockdowns and we're, you know, our brains are a bit tired. We've got so much other stuff going on. It's difficult to read a whole book every month, but we manage it. We certainly don't expect everyone else to keep up, which is why we're trying to, you know, now put in a few short story episodes every now and then, give people a break and ourselves. But I'm amazed that some people are really reading along. I think now it's great that we've had so many episodes out that there are people starting to listen now and going back and listening to them in order. And we've got new listeners like popping up and sending us comments and sending in questions.
I love getting comments on like episodes that we did like a year or so ago. And 'cause it's again, new perspectives on something that I haven't had the opportunity to think about since we did recorded it. So that's always great.
Yeah. So yeah, hopefully that answers your question, Belle, with this. So it's been really lovely and, it's worth the effort that we put in, I think, definitely. One last question before we introduce a couple of bonus bits from previous episodes. Lachlan asked one. This is kind of directed mostly to me, but if you've listened, I'd be interested in your opinion too, Liz. Lachlan asked, having just listened to season one of Night Terrace, which is, you know, shameless plug, my comedy audio series, radio show, would Eddie, that's my character that I play in the show, read Pratchett? And what do you think his favorite Terry Pratchett book is? Also, he asks, is there any chance of having Eddie as a guest? it'd be pretty easy to get, I think. I think I've got access to his schedule, assuming he can land the house that he travels through space and time in the right year.
Maybe time difference, though.
Yeah, maybe. Look,
did UK and here, so like, I reckon we could do different, you know.
Who knows? I mean, he's from Australia, but he's from Australia in 2014. That's when the house left Melbourne. Started traveling.
But like, why would in the future be at the same literal like 24-hour time as well?
Well, who knows? It wouldn't have to be.
Exactly.
Yeah. Well, I guess you could phone him up as well. That might work. I won't give a long answer to this because I know a lot of you won't have listened to Night Terrace. But thank you, first of all, Lachlan. Thank you for listening. That means a lot. It's one of the things that I'm proudest of having made. So thank you. I appreciate it. So Eddie is a big nerd, Eddie Jones. He's like a perpetual university student. He likes sci-fi and stuff. I think absolutely he would read Terry Pratchett. Which one is his favorite? There's a lot of me in him, but I don't think we have the same favorites. I think he would have a favorite Discworld book, and I think he has an avowed hatred of time travel because he doesn't understand it now that he has to actually live it. So, which is like opposite for me. I love it. So I reckon he wouldn't like Nightwatch, which is a lot of people's favorite. I reckon his favorite would probably be like, I reckon he'd really like The Fifth Elephant because it's like got a lot of dwarf stuff in it. I think he'd like some of the earlier ones. I think he'd be a bit of a Rincewind fan because he likes fantasy and sci-fi stuff. I don't know. I don't know what his favorite would be. I'm going to think more about this, Lachlan. I might come back with more of a... I kind of did think about it, and I was like, oh, yeah, I reckon I could answer that pretty easily. But now that I actually come to say it, I'm not really sure. Yeah, maybe going... I reckon he would like Going Postal. It's got a lot of nerd stuff in it. You know, it's a lot of, you know, a lot of computer science-y stuff. Not that he's that sort of nerd, but anyway. Anyway, we do have a question for you, listeners, before we introduce some bonus bits. Liz, do you want to ask the listeners the question? Because you came up with this question, and when you said it, I was like, this is genius. So please, please ask them. We want you to answer this. Please write in. You can do it via the Discord. You can do it via social media. We're Pratchett Podcast on Twitter and Facebook and Instagram. You can also do it via email. Send us an email, chat@pratchettpodcast.com. We'd love to hear from you. What should they tell us when they contact us, Liz?
Look, I'm not promising because I'm very shy, but also if you want us to do it, we will.
Yeah.
But if we were hypothetically to do another episode of Ook Club in character as two characters from Discworld, which characters should they be? And hypothetically, if that did happen, what should those two characters talk about?
I'm so excited about this.
Yeah, look, I am.
I don't
very
know
shy
if we could sustain a whole episode, but we definitely we could. Do. You reckon we could?
I reckon we could, like, with the right characters.
We should do it. Yeah, that's true. All right. And look, I will just append onto that. We also have nearly run out of our backlog of questions for Ook Club. So if you've got any new questions you want to ask us about the podcast itself, about Pratchett in general, about stuff that we haven't covered on any of the main episodes, please.
About WandaVision, apparently, because we've got a lot to say about that.
Yeah, if you want us to do, like if there's another show or author or something you want us to talk about, we'll do it. Just, you know, just ask us. We'll get into it. But look, we should wrap this up. Before we go though, there's a couple of bits that I thought we could play for some older episodes. There's some stuff from newer ones, but thought I'd go back in the archives a little bit, go back a year or two. Which is a weird thing.
Your Night Terror's character wouldn't like that.
No, he would hate that.
Yeah.
This is hates time travel. But look, this bit is great. We cut this out because it was a bit off topic and we needed to cut it shorter for time. But we had David Riding, who is, can I say this on the podcast? He's your boss now?
Yeah, he wasn't before and it's not connected, but like it just sort of, yeah.
That's how it worked out. Now you work for one of your jobs. You work for Melbourne City of Literature.
Office. Melbourne
City of Literature office. That's right. That's important.
Because we are the City of Literature. Like everyone in Melbourne is the City of Literature. The office is just the thing that like helps it along.
That's true. The official recognition. But yeah, we had David Riding on. He was on Pratchett 21 talking about Interesting Times, which is a novel and that we talked about. And anyway, listen to the episode if you want to know our feelings about it. But he had some really interesting things to say about Terry's legacy and the point in his legacy at which we find ourselves now. And this was before, you know, before The Watch came out, before any of the more recent stuff. So have a listen.
Is there going to be a new generation discovering Terry Pratchett, or are we the generation who are going to reread it and adore it, but it's going to just pass through in time?
Yeah. One of the things that I think is interesting is, and we haven't read a lot of his later works again yet, but having read a couple of later things, like Dodger, for example, which, you know, also was written for a younger audience, he does deal with some pretty serious topics, but much more gently. And I think writing in the sort of mid-90s, things have changed a lot in terms of the public conversation and awareness around lots of stuff. And I think if he'd been writing, if he was still writing now, he would be writing very different jokes to what he was writing then. So it is a bit harsh. Well, not harsh. I think it's difficult to know Because I think a lot of people were writing kind of similar stuff.
It's reflective of the time.
I'm not suggesting it's a criticism of him.
No.
I'm just interested of his time and place. And to put it in, like, I was reading this, when I read this originally, it was in the middle of the era of Dungeons & Dragons was huge. Mm. And it's still around, but it was huge. It really informed. Admittedly, I was working in a comic shop, so I was right in the middle of that community. Lord of the Rings was huge. It's before the movies. Fantasy was big. And I look at it now, and we're in the era of Game of Thrones. And I was watching season one while reading this. So it gave me very interesting visuals and possibly a much darker Terry Pratchett than he ever thought.
Mm.
But I'm curious. I'm curious about its life of a series of what has been a great series of books. And some of the books are stunning. Like, I think Soul Music's around here.
Mm. Yeah.
And that's
a
stunning book. And Going Postal is a really good book. And Feet of Clay, there's some really good books.
Yeah.
I wouldn't be able to list their plots. I just remember how stunning they were.
Yeah.
So I've gone off track of interesting times.
But I'm trying to think, like, two series of the past, like, from, like, do series survive as series, or do individual books sort of bob up from them? Like, do people read them as series?
Yeah.
It's like Harry Potter will survive as a series because it is basically one very, very long book. Mm. But, yeah, will I'm it? Just trying to think of other examples.
Do you think Harry Potter will?
I think it will for a good long time.
Mm,
then I think it will disappear for a while. Then I think it will be bobbing up again.
I thought the strength of Harry Potter was the release date, the way it came out. And if you grew up at the same age as Harry, which I didn't, obviously, it was the most magnificent series of books. And there's an energy around it. And I'm curious, like, what makes a classic? And are we seeing classics in the last 40 years of fiction and in kids' fiction? Like, my daughter, she's 7 and she's just getting into Diana Wynne Jones.
Good.
And that's, you know, that's, are they better written books? Yeah, probably. But they can come back. Or something like Susan Cooper's Darkest Rising series is a really strongly written. And again, different to Terry Pratchett. And so I don't know what line I'm saying. I'm curious. I'm just curious about the weight of numbers of Terry and the fact that in bookshops, he's not around anymore. And I find that amazing. You don't have all of them.
Mm. And his also choice ones, yeah.
Yeah, and the rebranding of it, the fact that they've tried to make the novels look old when they had that great cartoon. I find it, that's amazing as well.
Mm.
Yeah.
Mm. Yeah.
I had no point there. I was just observing, and I'm curious about if in 20 years people will suddenly discover him again, or it's, you know, take something like the David Eddings series, if they're still being read. Mm. David Eddings, Bill Garrod, all those ones, and they're great books.
I think, well, I mean, one of the things that's unique about Terry's writing is because there's so many books, there's, you know, 71 novels, something crazy, and 41 Discworld books, is that they exist over such a long period of time that we do go back and look at the earlier ones with the lens of having read the later ones.
Yeah.
And I think I've said this before on the podcast, but it's kind of like how Doctor Who has that same thing because it's been around for like 55, 56 years now. You do go back and look at the earlier stuff, whereas if it had just been made in the 60s and that was it, you wouldn't go back and re-examine it. Like, if you're into it, you might reread it. But now, you know, it's got that sort of thing that pokes into the future or into the present. And I think Terry's, you know, there's the Good Omens has just come out. There's going to be a Watch series. They've announced there's going to be a Morrison is, Morrison is Educated Rodents film. So there's a lot of stuff happening which will
stir the waters.
Yeah. And sort of, you know, get him back into the public eye.
Maybe it's like an Agatha Christie situation where every so often, like, a book will get made into a film or.
Agatha Christie, though, I think that's an interesting. I wonder if that's it, because Agatha Christie can be televised and filmed and set again. And using the Doctor Who reference, Ben, because Doctor Who has stayed with us generationally and came through. And I've watched Doctor Who since I was younger. But Terry's here. And because we've not really had the breakthrough televisation or movie and he's never really had that moment. Like, there's been the plays, and let's not talk about them, and there's been a couple of pop culture moments, and there've been some graphic novels. And it's interesting, will it be in this sort of era of making great TV like Good Omens, will there be a Discworld series come up? And will that unload the books?
That's what The Watch has got the promise
to
be.
So
we don't know. It could happen. But that's, I mean, look, this is, I find it fascinating that this book is the one that has prompted this preamble, because we don't normally get into these sort of existential questions about what is Terry's legacy? How does it work? Will people still read him?
Yeah.
Great.
I've never read a Terry Pratchett book and had to think about it. I've read them as rollicking good reads and loved at moments. Go, it's great. Never gone, why do people don't like Rincewind? Why do they write this? But I'm always curious about, like, and I think it's because I had to go and buy the book. So this is a disclaimer. run the City Literature Office. My mother's a librarian. She has an award named after her. I don't like using libraries. I like buying books. I like owning books. I like giving the books away. I had to go to the library for this one. Got a great local library, so it's okay.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, most of them are great. It's a City of Literature after all.
Yeah. Well done. You can stay.
Thanks.
Ting.
He has the power to kick you out if you don't like the City of Literature.
Send you to Dunedin or something like that.
Oh, no. That was great.
Hmm.
But obviously we had a few things to say there as well. But this other bit I wanted to talk about.
Look, I'm frankly disappointed that it's not about vampire boners, but I will look past that.
Well, look, if you've listened to our Carpe Jugulum episode, or indeed the one before that,
or if we had My Way every episode,
there was considerable talk about vampires and vampire boners. But this, Liz's obsession, and indeed mine, with vampires goes back way further. Back in our Feet of Clay episode, Pratchett 24 with Nate Byrne, we tried to sneak a bit of vampire chat in there. Here's what we had to say. Yeah, again, talking about World of Darkness games, in the vampire one, there's a thing that vampires can do called the vinculum, because if you drink a vampire's blood, you become sort of magically sort of bewitched by them. You have to do what they say. Mm. And if vampires drink each other's blood, that can happen to them too. But one of the sects of vampires will get in a little group and they'll mix all their blood together and they'll all drink it. So they're all bound to each other. So nobody's in charge. And it's,
their blood would be so gross though.
It would be super gross. Oh. Yeah. Yeah. But I mean, if you're a vampire, you're used to it.
And if it's not pumping around, it's just there. Oh, it's so gross.
It is pretty gross.
And it'd be all dry.
Why did you specifically say 5 liters?
That's how much blood we have. Or it's 4 liters.
Well, they don't use all of their blood, just
a
bit.
No, I'm saying all we have is that much.
Vampire sitting there, a bag of really old blood.
No, because it's renewed, because they're drinking new blood all the time.
No, that is not how anatomy works. I've thought about how vampires drink blood. And so...
Okay.
Either they bite into a neck and then they suck the blood through their mouth, or they have hollow fangs that work like straws and they can kind of drink through their fangs. Either way, it goes through the gastrointestinal system and would just like normal food. And parts of that would be absorbed into blood, sure. But I don't really understand, because they're not alive. They're not pumping their blood around. So their gastrointestinal system wouldn't be working. So what does that blood do? Is it just magically, I don't think it gets, doesn't replace their blood, is what I'm saying.
Well, I mean, this is where
it just revitalizes them.
This is why it's so much fun to make up your own version of vampires, because they kind of know how they work because they're people, and you know what kind of supernatural powers they have to have, and you know how they fuel themselves. But then you're like, but if I wanted to get into the nitty gritty of how it works, I can, but I get to make it up because the folklore doesn't say anything about that. And in the World of Darkness vampire games, they talk about the fact that vampire blood sort of mystically, when they drink it, it just sort of suffuses itself throughout their entire system, and it doesn't really pump around their veins much.
Oh, so they don't bother with a circulatory system. They're just kind of a soggy sponge.
They kind of do, but they have to sort of
blood bag.
Because they can feed each other by saying, yeah, drink from my veins, but they have to sort of concentrate, I think, and make it flow on purpose. They have some control over it. It's a bit weird.
Now that you say that, I've seen a lot of vampire movies where they do just seem to, when the vampire's offering themselves, they just seem to offer anything, not necessarily a particularly good vein. So maybe you do just prod a vampire and it just gushes out no matter where.
Bag.
Yeah, just big blood bags walking around. That's gross.
Then they need a lot more than 5 liters. That's maybe. Why they have to.
Okay. Oh, gosh.
How much water do we have? It's more than that, isn't it? Oh, no, because a lot of that water is in the blood.
In the blood, yeah.
Yeah. I don't know. There's just always more to say about vampires, really, isn't there?
And their boners.
And their boners. But we're not talking about them today. But that was fun. I enjoyed that. And this was fun too. Liz, thank you.
Thank you. So this was, more of this, please.
Yeah, we'll do some more of this. It has been a struggle to schedule a time. We both have...
Time is a flat circle, as you know.
I'm so glad you said that. I've been trying to put together a trailer for the podcast and have different examples of you saying that, and you just haven't said it enough in the pod. Can you just say it 4 times in a row in different ways?
Oh, when you least expect it, it's going to be great.
Yeah, okay. All right. Just do it in the next episode. You'll find it.
And the episode after that. It'll be great.
I know you will. But no, this has been fun. We'll do this some more. We have got a plan together now for doing our special bonus episode with topics chosen by our EEK tier subscribers. So if you're listening to this, don't worry. That is coming. We've kind of decided if we're only going to do one a year, we should release it on the glorious 25th of May. So that episode will come out on that day. We've got three great topics from our Eek tier subscribers, and we will do more Oot Club in the near future. So please send us some more questions. Let us know which characters we should pretend to be. And we have some great ideas for how we might collaborate with some of the other Pratchett podcasters out there. Actually, you know, one bonus question I want to ask you just before we go. If you have listened to any of those other podcasts, which episodes do you heartily recommend? Because we haven't listened to too many because we like to come into our podcast with a clean mind, so to speak, as in we want to present you our ideas rather than other people's. So
untainted by other views.
Exactly. But we would love to listen to some more of them. So if you have any episodes that you particularly recommend or moments, let us know.
I'm so sorry. I have to dash off because like, we're literally totally watching a thing at 8:30.
Are you actually watching? What's this thing?
The ghost train thing. It's like a documentary about like a fire and a ghost train in the 70s. So I don't know anything about it, but yeah, I kind of want to see how good the documentary is. Watching I have to dash off.
Are you it's in 4 minutes. Cinema? It's in 4 minutes?
No, it's on TV. So oh, you can watch live. It too.
Okay. All right. Yeah. You got to go.
You can watch it too.
Maybe I will.
Yeah.
Maybe I will.